thanks very much, Brian, and thanks all of you for coming to listen to what is a work in progress, so I'll appreciate any comments you may have. So just to introduce this project, the project is called Corporations, Technology, and the Law, and this is because I was thinking of calling it Corporate Law and Technology, but I called it Corporations, Technology, and the Law because, and you'll see this in the chapter I'll talk about today, sometimes you need to look at things like privacy, cybersecurity, because they become really relevant for corporate governance in the current day and age. So it may go a little beyond corporate law, but I don't get into the substantive, not too much of the substantive issues of these other laws. Okay, so with that preface, let me dive right in with the key argument of this chapter, that, which is corporate governance and technology. I still need a good title for the chapter. But the key argument here is in the current situation where different types of technology, and I don't just mean high-end technology like AI or blockchain, but even something at the lower end of the spectrum like Zoom or Teams that allows for online meetings, social media, any sort of technology comes under the radar for this argument. So in the current sort of scenario where technology is changing the way corporations do business and function, corporate governance should include a key element called, this is my term, called digital governance. Now, the term digital governance is used in other contexts. So if you see trade agreements, you'll have clauses on digital governance. So this is sort of a different context in which I'm using the same term. But I use it as a subset of corporate governance. I say that within key areas of corporate governance, every vertical should have a digital governance aspect to it. Now, what do I mean by digital governance? This is quite broad, and I'll flesh it out as I go in my talk today. I should really keep a watch on the time. Thank you. So to flesh out what I mean by digital governance, I divide that into three layers. And if you imagine a pyramid, at the pointy end of the pyramid that's right at the top, you can think of AI-driven corporations. So basically no humans at the helm. You have AI completely running the show. And I put it right at the top, like the tip of the iceberg, because I don't see this as an issue today. But I address it anyway because much smarter academics have taken it seriously and written about it, so I shouldn't ignore it, I address it. But I address it very little, so I leave a small, like I said, the pointy end of the pyramid is AI-driven companies. And then the next layer, a little broader, is AI assisting corporate governance. So in core corporate governance, you use AI to help. That, I think, is more feasible today, and I talk more about that. And the third layer, which is the broadest, biggest layer, and I think every company should deal with this, is basically everything else in digital governance. So this could include AI in corporate operations, not necessarily in corporate governance, or it could simply include other types of technology, like how companies are responding to new issues through that come up because of social media or holding on to customer data, so data security issues, cybersecurity issues. It could even be security issues in terms of holding online meetings. Are they giving enough opportunity for shareholders to make themselves heard in meetings, these sort of things. And I think this third layer is really important for every company. And in terms of my proposal for digital governance, I say every company should be thinking of this, but I'm not really proposing a sort of legislative intervention type solution at this point. If anything, when I come to that part of my paper in the end, I'll talk about more light touch sort of intervention. I think you would have seen if you saw the abstract that I also talk a little bit about possibly saying that you need tech expertise on the board. I'll temper that down as I explain possible solutions to this in legislative intervention terms. But I do think from a firm-specific perspective, it's important for company boards to have a think about what expertise is required, whether they get themselves trained or hire directors that have the training is up to them. Okay, so that's my argument in brief. Now, let me start talking about that pointy end of the pyramid, right? The self-driven companies or AI-driven companies. Now, surveying what's going on in terms of AI use in corporate governance, this doesn't exist right now. So, and in terms of what I personally think, I don't think this is possible that we reach a point where all corporate governance is carried on by AI, simply because I think corporate governance involves a lot more than decisions made based on data, right? Sometimes it involves complex negotiation with different stakeholders, and you need to make real-time decisions, factor in, and this is something the previous chapter, this is chapter 2 of the book. So chapter 1 talks about how geopolitical risks, all of these have become sort of important, and you need humans at the helm to assess these sort of moving pieces. Commentators, scholars like Martin Petrin, Horst Edenmuller, John Armour have spoken about the possibility of having AI-driven companies. And in that context, they think of liability regimes. And they think about how you can change the director's duties system. And there are different suggestions. Some of the more persuasive ones are about maybe creating a form of insurance when you use a type of AI governance product. You either make the provider of that product liable, or you figure out a complex insurance system. I surveyed all of these sort of possible solutions, and my main sort of hesitation with this, and I'll be glad to hear thoughts and about this point, because I'm still thinking about it, but my main hesitation here is I think corporate governance and the role of directors involves some element of morality, even though we don't articulate it that way in statutory provisions. But the way in which a lot of case law decisions, at least in Delaware, in the US, there's a lot of words in different judgments that sort of bring up moral elements to what was expected from directors. And maybe just because the underlying root of fiduciary duties has moral expectations, there is a bit of difficulty. And I think in the limited survey of ethics and AI type research I've looked at, they haven't quite figured out how to code ethical decision making into AI. So I'll leave that part of the pyramid I described at that and move to the second part, which is AI assisting boards. Here I think we have a little more purchase, because I look at the current sort of expectations from boards and where they're falling short and how we can help. Here I draw from some of the some of my research earlier on in the context of diversity. I had looked at if you make, so I was thinking about bringing diverse perspectives to the board in the context of how you can actually get people with diverse perspectives to voice those perspectives on the board, because there is this concept called groupthink, where people who belong to a group, especially a high esteem group, start to slowly agree with each other. If one member doesn't agree, they try and make themselves sort of agree with everyone else, because boards make decisions through consensus. So there are concerns about, even if you have independent directors on the board, sometimes they don't push or question management enough on issues. So I had talked about how possibly having an AI decision maker as part of the group can help push back on groupthink. And let me explain. I draw from how cancer specialists, oncologists, I don't know how this works in other hospitals, but I looked specifically at one hospital in India where IBM Watson's oncology product was used. So basically, before this AI product came in, the doctors used to get around the table, around 10 of them. Each had their own sort of course of treatment to suggest for the patient, and then they deliberated and came to a consensual decision. This was for very complex cases. Now, when they've included IBM Watson, they just use it as one other suggestion on the table. And there are instances that come out through interviews, I didn't conduct them, but interviews that I've studied, where they look at how everyone's recommending radiation, but the AI decision is to recommend chemotherapy. So then they look at this IBM Watson product actually gives you references of what medical studies it's drawing from. So they look at the references and then they make decisions based on that. So in terms of, and this is just an example, in terms of how we can incorporate AI in board decision making, but there's also newer research on where AI and humans work together. In recent days, you've had humans susceptible to deferring to the AI decision, so they seldom verify too much. So saying that actually they're working well with each other is not enough. You need to you need to make sure, and this is where the expertise issue comes in, right? You need to make sure you know what the decision is based on, how it's coming, so question the data. So when you think of all this, you wonder if the incorporation of AI in board decision-making is adding more costs. So this is why I leave it to... I think it's a firm-specific decision that boards have to decide if they should actually use AI for decision-making, and if yes, how best can they use it, how can they deal with the costs. And all of what I'm saying in terms of how you can use AI for board decision-making is sort of really emphasizing the monitoring role of the board. So if I draw on this a little more and think about AI used to implement strategy. So management using AI to maybe pick up red flags from different departments, so non-compliance, risk management, those sort of things. It would become important for boards in order to properly monitor management on these issues to have enough expertise to ask questions like, where is this AI system coming from? Whose data have we trained the AI system on? And have you? How well is this human team working with the AI team? So these are the sort of issues I pick up on. And this is most of the content on the AI-assisted boards part of the chapter. But I also have a little on other roles of the board. So particularly in organizational studies, you think of the board members bringing access to different types of networks and information. And I think there's this idea that if you have third-party companies giving AI products for corporate governance, and the same product is being used by different companies, then you sort of get the information from different companies. I'm not sure this is how it will work, because I think once you buy the product, you want to keep it contained within the firm. You don't want your information to keep going out to everyone else. It's like if you've used ChatGPT, if you put in your essay and ask it to edit it, that essay is usable by others. So you don't want something like that, right? You want it bounded. So I don't know how much it'll help with the resource provision aspect of the role of the board. So maybe I should quickly move to the broader digital governance aspect. So here I talk about, so quickly, I think if you're using AI for smaller things like recruitment, even at the basic level, like you use an AI product to screen a large number of applications you get initially, and then humans take over. But even on these matters, I think there are risks involved. The EU AI Act, New York City has a AI audit requirement when AI is used for recruitment. So these sort of little laws cropping up across jurisdictions are important to keep track of. But I also say in the context of AI, but also in the context of privacy issues, which is very different in different countries in terms of how you can bring a case for breach of privacy, and cybersecurity issues. I think companies operating in multiple jurisdictions should be tracking these developments, but also I draw from an old paper of John Armour's where he talks about forward compliance, where directors should anticipate regulation and try to comply even when there's no regulation in place. And I think this is particularly important for these sort of tech-related challenges because usually there's the negative costs of any risks that are not mitigated are spread across different stakeholders, not just on your shareholders. And it could result in large class actions, a lot of negative publicity. So you want to try and address these risks as you go. And I mentioned things like social media. And on social media, in this chapter, I'll just say that companies have started to respond to a lot of social media conversations by different people. It could be shareholders, but it's mostly customers, sometimes employees speaking anonymously. And I think this has become so prevalent that now you need to actually have a social media strategy rather than responding in the short term and dealing with the costs of this later. So there's a little bit of the getting on the back of some ideological wave and the risks associated with that overturning, with that ideological wave turning and costs faced by companies. Should all be sort of factored in on the board. And here, it's not just tech expertise, but other sorts of sensitivities that are important. And I say that you also need to think of age diversity on the board because it's usually post-millennials, so Gen Z that's interacting with companies on social media, and most boards don't know how to deal with this or how to strategize about this. So management is going berserk without being monitored, like you saw with Elon Musk tweeting funding secured, but there's been many other tweets after that. And there's Ryanair's TikTok activity. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. So these sorts of things become something that the board might need to monitor as well. In my last few minutes, I'll move to talking about my legal legislative or light legislative proposal. In everything I've said so far, you might imagine that I'm calling for more tech expertise on the board, maybe even top management team. I'm calling for age diversity on the board. But I want to be very careful about this actually coming through even in soft law, because, and this brings it out very nicely, there's a proposal in the US, an SEC proposal on cybersecurity. The proposal was just to require companies to make certain disclosures about how they're addressing cybersecurity risks ex ante and also how they're dealing with an incident ex post, right? And one of the things, this provision has now been deleted even from the proposal, but one of the provisions they say said that you should also disclose what cyber expertise you have on the board. And this, when it was just a proposal, resulted in a lot of companies changing their disclosures. And I draw from a very nice paper by Yoren Nili and Roy Shapira called specialist directors. So they actually talk about this as a bigger trend, specialist directors in ESG, climate change, and cyber and tech, but I'm looking at it only with the tech focus. But the concern, I think, is valid, particularly for tech. And what they identified, they've actually looked at disclosures, and they identified some problems with this sort of pressure to have tech expertise on the board. And some of these problems, I think, are when people are looking for this, you tend to focus on how you're disclosing it and not on how you're actually using that expertise. So in my light touch proposal, what I would say is there should be some guidance for companies on disclosing if they have measures to address tech-related issues, digital governance issues. Disclose not just, I know that disclosures are considered to be meant for shareholders, but currently there's been a lot of interest, particularly in these sort of tech companies, for everyone, non-governmental groups, but also I mentioned the Gen Zs, right? Everyone wants to know about what companies are doing on these issues. So I say disclosure in accessible form, plain language, how they're addressing tech-related risks. And guidance to this should specifically warn against focusing too much on board composition, but more on what you're actually doing down the chain. So maybe that brings me to time.
Oh, you got a little bit more time.
I got a little bit more. So how can I use the extra time? So in these sort of legislative, it's not quite a legislative proposal, but I don't make it very jurisdiction specific. I talk about, I give the example of UK corporate governance code, but I also sort of say, even when you have, and again, I draw from diversity because that was my previous area of research, even when you have something like a soft law or a target, it becomes perceived as almost a hard quota, because if you sort of recommend 30% women, then everybody wants at least 30% women on the board. They see that they're doing something wrong if they don't have it. And in the race to meet this target, you might sort of, in diversity, we call them golden skirts, hiring the same people across, same women across boards. And in tech, Yoren Nili and Roy Shapira identify that they got the same people for tech expertise across different boards, which means that they don't have enough time and energy to contribute on each board. And also another, maybe since I have a minute more, another thing they identify is if you have an expert on the board on a certain topic, it, again, I spoke of deference to AI decisions, but think of the same concept, deference to an expert, right? Why apply my mind and ask questions when the expert has okayed it? So these are the sort of behavioral challenges we need to warn against if we bring any sort of legislative proposal, even if it's soft law. So I'll stop there, and I'll welcome questions and comments.